Ginevra.
Ginevra.
Good morning. I'm opening this meeting of the House Committee on Revenue, Thursday, April 4th. We're going to take items not in the order they're printed on the agenda, because I want to ensure that the maximum number of committee members are present to hear the public testimony. We have no one signed up to speak for two of the bills. We're going to start with those first. I'm opening a public hearing on House Bill 2133, Legislative Revenue Office.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2133 is a measure. This is one of the tax credits up for sunset renewal this long session. So House Bill 2133 is one of those nine tax credits. So the measure before you is just a simple six-year extension of that existing law sunset. But what House Bill 2133 is relating to, it's the what's considered the personal income tax credit for a certain retirement income. So this is an income tax credit for individuals that are 62 years or older with the specified retirement income. And there is some information in the SMS. It also included on OLIS is the excerpt related to this tax credit that's from the LRO paper that we prepare for the legislature for the nine or the any of the tax credits that are up for sunset renewal. So that information is contained in OLIS and is being brought up on the screen. And I don't know how much information you'd like me to go into it at this time. I can provide a little more background on the credit if that's preferred.
So that's the last one in that list on that table, correct?
Yes, okay, it is.
Yeah. I would like you to provide just one or two more minutes of additional background for the committee.
Yeah. Okay, Madam Chair. So just scrolling down a bit here in the document that you see up on the screen. The certain retirement income, so the description of the credit, it is a credit equal to 9% of the retirement or the pension, the qualified pension income. Now that 9%, again, aligns with Oregon's tax, most popular, I suppose, tax rate, marginal tax rate of 9%. And you can see the qualified pension income, the types are described further along in the bullets on the document up there. So this would include things like an employee pension plan, annuity plans, and then also public retirement systems of maybe the federal, state, or local governments. And just to give a little context on when this credit was created, it really did have, in some cases, in mind federal employees that had pension income that weren't also receiving Social Security income. Because the way the credit is limited, it is set up to be aimed primarily for lower income individuals or individuals with lower income and have this pension income. And then as your Social Security benefits increase, the amount of the credit that you can qualify for goes down. And again, this was in line with many of the federal employees leading up to generally like the 80s, is they qualified for a federal pension but not for Social Security as well. It was more of in place of that. So there is more background, certainly in the paper that's online, that talks about the changes over time and how Oregon has taxed federal pension income. And some of those changes that occurred really have limited the use of this credit to, at this point, it's relatively pretty small. It's about $1.5 million per biennium. And the use of this credit is going down as the limits of the credit. So the Social Security limits and the limits on income are fixed. They're not indexed to inflation. So without any changes, we do continue to see year over year, the number of people and the benefit to the people that are taking this credit is generally trending down over the years.
Thank you, Representative Finley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you tell me how many people qualify for this and how many participants there are?
Yes. Reference my notes here. So most recent tax year was 2016 that we have information on that's published, and it was about 5,000 taxpayers in total, with the average revenue impact for those of $130 is the reduction liability. So it's about, it came to about 700,000 per tax year, about a million, a little less than $1.5 million per biennium.
Okay.
Any other questions? Thank you. I'm closing the public hearing on House Bill 2133. Now we will move to a public hearing. House Bill 2132.
That's the cultural trust.
Mm-hmm. And Representative Resch has just joined us.
Great.
Okay, Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2132, we are getting the sign-up sheet for this one being brought up here momentarily. 2132 is the second of the three credits that you have in front of you today. Again, this is another six-year extension of an existing tax credit that is up for review, and this one is relating to the credit for contributions to the Trust for Cultural Development. So in this case, the way this is for either individual personal income tax filers or corporate taxpayers as well. And the way this one is set up, this credit is, it is a credit that's providing for individuals that make first a contribution to a general, say, a cultural nonprofit. If they then subsequently make a contribution to the Trust for Cultural Development, there is a credit available for that contribution to the Trust for Culture or the Cultural Trust. So the amount of that credit is the amount of the contribution, but there are limits in place of $500 for a single filing taxpayer, $1,000 for a joint, or $2,500 for a corporate income taxpayer. Again, there are some background materials in OLIS that have been prepared by Legislative Revenue as well, so that is there for reference. I do know we have a bit of testimony on this one as well, so unless you want me to go into further detail, I can leave my discussion or my background.
We'll, yes, we'll save it for later if there are questions or anything not mentioned by those persons signed up to testify. First, I'd like to call up Brian Rogers.
Chair Nathanson and Vice Chair Finley and Vice Chair Marsh and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Brian Rogers and I am the Executive Director of the Oregon Arts Commission and the Oregon Cultural Trust. Thank you for this opportunity today to provide an overview of the Cultural Trust. It is unique. No other state has a tax credit program like ours. Created in 2002 by the Oregon Legislature, the Trust is a testament to how much Oregonians value culture and its impact on our famous quality of life. The Trust's mission is to lead Oregon in cultivating, growing, and valuing culture as an integral part of communities. And the Cultural Trust supports House Bill 2132 to extend the sunset for the cultural tax credit for contributions to the Trust for Cultural Development account for another 6 years. Today, I would like to briefly cover the following things: the economic impact of culture in our state, an overview of the trust programs, and a description of the donation and tax credit program, and some impacts of the federal tax reform, and then I'll close with a few grant impact stories. In 2017, the Arts Commission and the Cultural Trust partnered with the Americans for the Arts to conduct one statewide and 12 regional arts and economic prosperity studies, and the studies provide compelling evidence that the nonprofit arts and culture sector is a significant industry in our state, one that generates $364 million in direct industry economic activity. This spending by nonprofit and arts and cultural organizations and an additional $323 million in event-related spending by their audiences supports 13,939 jobs. Total attendance at arts and cultural organizations was over $9.9 million. During 2015, a total of 36,750 volunteers donated nearly 1.6 million hours to Oregon's arts and culture organizations, and that has an estimated aggregate value of $37.5 million. The Oregon Cultural Trust is an ongoing funding engine for culture across the state. Through the tax credit, the Cultural Trust raised $4.8 million in 2018 from over 8,800 donors. And last year, we received $374,000 from the sale of 13,169 Cultural Trust license plates. Those funds are currently designated to support our marketing efforts for promoting the tax credit and supporting culture statewide. And the total number of registered plates is 26,694. 60% of our funding, or $3 million, raised through the donations we allocate to our grant-making programs, and 40%, $1.8 million, was placed in our permanent fund for future generations. The Trust direct grant-making program, called the Cultural Development Program, has four granting categories and supports cultural projects across the state. In the last biennium, 177 cultural projects received direct support. And there is a list of cultural development awards in OLIS. Awards are determined through a peer review process by a peer application review panel to adjudicate the applications using specific criteria. Each year, we also fund the 45 county and tribal coalitions. Each county, tribe, or county receives a block grant from the trust, which they re-grant to fund projects. In fiscal year 2017, the coalitions made 473 local awards, and a list of those awards sorted by coalition or tribe and by house district is in OLIS. And we also have the privilege of funding our five cultural partners: the Oregon Arts Commission, Oregon Humanities, the Heritage Commission, Historical Society, and the State Historic Preservation Office. To fund these programs, the Cultural Trust encourages Oregonians to donate to one or more of the 1,400 registered nonprofits in the state, then donate a matching amount to the Cultural Trust. The matching amount to the trust can then be claimed as a 100% state tax credit, and that's up to $500 for individuals, $1,000 for couples filing jointly, and $2,500 for C-class corporations. And I would like to update the committee on our current donation status, especially in light of the federal tax reform and our decreased marketing budget. In 2017 and 18, the trust raised $4.8 million, and 9,100 donors participated in the tax credit. Currently, we're experiencing a $428,000 reduction, or 7.5% reduction, and a net loss of 989 donors, or 10% reduction. This graphic representation of the trust fundraising over 11 years, on average, we experience about a 5% growth rate each year from 2009 to 2018. And again, to reiterate, this year we're seeing an overall reduction of 7.5%. Early reporting from the National Council of Nonprofits is showing that charitable giving rose 1.6% from last year, despite a pace of inflation of 2.44%. Giving would normally be expected to grow in the order of 3 to 5%. Contributions over $1,000 increased by 2.6%, but there was a 4% reduction in contributions of less than $1,000. And again, the maximum contribution that is eligible for the tax credit is $1,000. Some individuals are using donor-advised funds to distribute to nonprofits. These funds from these accounts is technically not the donor's fund, but the donor-advised account, and therefore is not eligible for the tax credit. Additionally, some individuals are doubling down on donations, meaning they are giving to nonprofits every other year to reach the minimum itemization amount on the federal taxes. In the year these individuals are not giving, they will probably not donate to the trust. The trust plans to survey our donors who typically donate but did not this year. We have experienced a fairly high rate of donor retention, and we would like to research why close to 1,000 donors did not participate in the tax credit this year. It may be the real or perceived impacts of the federal tax reform, and or it might be the result of our reduced marketing budget. Typically, we remind people via post-mail, email, in conjunction with a fairly substantial marketing campaign. These activities were reduced due to a limited administrative and marketing budget, and the budget in fiscal year 2017 was $420,000 and currently is $195,000, which is a $225,000 reduction. And this reduction was caused by the reallocation of personnel expenses from the Arts Commission to the Cultural Trust. And additionally, the trust admin administrative budget is capped at $400,000 a fiscal year. Last year, the trust worked with the economic consulting firm Econ Northwest to compile a report on the impacts of the Cultural Trust and the Tax Credit, and this report analyzed data from 2006 to 2016. We see that trust donors are located throughout the state, and the map on the left shows the number of unique donors across the counties, and roughly 52% of the donors are located in Clackamas, Multnomah, and Washington counties. While the majority of donors reside in those three counties, 60% of our funds are dispersed outside of those counties. The two maps show the geographic reach by county of total funding through the two grant programs that distribute the majority of the trust funds, the cultural development grants and the county and tribal coalition grants. And as you can see, the trust grants reach all corners of the state, and counties with larger populations get higher dollar amounts, but funds per capita are the highest in the eastern part of the state, where populations are smaller and more dispersed. And I would just like to close today with two brief impact stories to kind of demonstrate the work of the Cultural Trust. In fiscal year 2018, the trust funded the Southern Oregon University's Foundation Young Artist Institute for at-risk and low-income students. The multidisciplinary 10-day residential summer program served 46 students from 16 school districts in 9 counties. The grant also covered financial aid for close of half the students who otherwise would not be able to attend. The Cultural Trust funds are supporting the renovation of the historic Baker Orpheum Theater in Baker City to become a community performing arts center. First opened in 1889 as the Orpheum Theater. In 1956, the theater was closed and sat vacant until about 1964, when it was remodeled into a hardware store. Later, it was a clothing store and then a music store before closing in 2015. In May 2016, the effort to restore the building and reopen it as the Baker Orpheum Theater began. Much of the original decorative features will be revealed after being hidden for years behind false walls and ceilings. Building Committee Chair Aletha Bonebreak credits the Cultural Trust grant with opening doors for future grants from the Oregon Community Foundation and other sources. And this is a photograph of a recently approved design rendering the theater's new marquee. Thank you, committee members, for consideration of House Bill 2132.
Thank you. Any questions?
Yes. Not a question, more of a comment. The Cultural Trust is kind of special to me in that I had a chance to work with the original founder of the Cultural Trust, Representative Ben Westland, back in 2001. He and at the time a representative by the name of Betsy Johnson worked hard to put the Cultural Trust together. And it's interesting, the very first time I met Representative Westland was in Baker City, and he was at a meeting talking about the establishment of this trust that would preserve cultural resources throughout Oregon. And so I just wanted to share that.
Thank you. Representative Reschke.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And Mr. Rogers, thank you for coming forward with this. You may have mentioned your testimony, I may have missed it, but you said there are corporate donors and individual donors, and I just kind of like to understand that a little bit better as far as the number, kind of a percentage breakdown of individuals versus corporate, and then a percentage breakdown in far as dollar donations from individuals and corporate. And you may not have that with you today, but I'd like to see that at some time.
Representative and Chair Nathanson and members of the committee, yes, we could absolutely get you the details on that. Roughly, we have about this year 8,800 individual donors, and we typically receive most of our funding from them, and we have between 20 and 30 C-class corporations that donate to the trust annually, and it fluctuates each year. And again, C-class corporations can give up to $2,500.
Right. Okay. And then a second question, it's not for Mr. Rogers, but probably for Kyle. Is there a cap on this tax deduction or credit? Is there a maximum amount? So if Nike and, you know, I understand they can only give $2,500, but I'm just thinking I'm just wondering, trying to cap it, I guess, to make sure that we don't let it go. Historically, it's been, I don't know, 8 point whatever million. But is there a cap on this at all?
Representative Reschke, no, it's just the cap is just on those individual.
On the individuals, so it's just the number that give and the amount that they can give, or corporations. Okay, thank you.
I would like you to return to slides 6 and 7, please. Right, thank you.
Is that?
Yes, that's it, thank you. That's a pretty striking illustration of something. And as you pointed out, you need to do more research to determine if one of those two possible causes you mentioned is more responsible for this drop-off. But that's extremely significant. Could you just repeat that for us again?
Sure. Chair Nathanson, this graphic is really demonstrating how the trust over since 2009 has been on an average of a 5% increase annually from the previous year up to our highest point ever in the trust history of $4.8 million in 2018. And again, with the federal tax reform and our pretty substantial reduction in marketing budget, we dropped $428,000 from last year to this year. And again, we're going to work hard and survey those lapsed donors. We have folks that have been giving, all 13 years of the trust existence at the cap amount of $1,000. There's a high retention rate with the cultural trust because once people participate, they see the value in it, the impact that we have across the state. Folks are very happy that 60% of our funding is spread across the state, outside of the Portland metro area. And the per capita funding in those areas is pretty high. So, it's continually, we have to remind people about the cultural trust and continue to raise awareness, especially with new donors who typically come in with a smaller dollar amount. Maybe it's $20, and they see that it works. And then what we've seen over the longitudinal study of that is that those dollar amounts increase as they get more comfort and more awareness about the work of the trust.
And could you please move to the next slide and say a bit more about donor-advised funds and also the point of perhaps some people deciding to give every other year instead of annually? Could you explain that a bit more?
Chair Nathanson, thank you, and members of the committee. Donor-advised funds are where an individual or a couple can put a sum of money and then direct that account to allocate funding to different nonprofits. And typically what they do is put in an amount into that donor-advised account that would, last for a couple of years so they can claim it, itemize it in 1 year and disperse from that account over a number of years without being taxed on it. When the donor-advised account writes a check, it's from that account. It's not from the individual, although the individual is recognized as the source of the funding. So they're no longer eligible to donate to the cultural trust because the check actually would come from the donor-advised account and not the individual, so they could not claim that on their taxes. For the doubling down, what we're learning is that the minimum amount to itemize is now set at $24,000. So we've seen some people donate above that minimum, let's say $25,000 in 1 year, therefore itemizing. They communicate to their organizations and tell them that don't expect anything in the next year because I'm giving you what I typically give you in 2 years in 1 year. And in the off year, when they're not giving, that means that they're not eligible for the cultural trust tax credit and would not, typically donate to the cultural trust. There's been, and again, we're looking into the researching exactly how many folks have moved to this kind of model and to see if that is one of the reasons that they did not donate to the cultural trust this year.
Thank you. Any other questions? Yes, Representative Marsh.
Thank you. Could you say a little bit more about the reduction in your marketing and promotion budget, what that's caused, how you've had to compensate?
Vice Chair Marsh and Chair Nathanson, members of the committee. The reduction in the marketing budget occurred when, at the beginning of this current biennium, when personnel expenditures that were traditionally paid by the Arts Commission were transferred to the Cultural Trust. The Cultural Trust has an admin cap of $400,000. It's a limitation. And we also received the support from the license plate, which was also used to help support one of our staff people that does marketing and communications. And the reduction of $225,000 in marketing meant a pretty severe cutback on our direct mail, which a lot of our donors are, you know, of a certain age, that they prefer to get a hard copy of things in the mail rather than email. And without that constant reminder of the trust, they sometimes don't remember to donate. And also we have, we work with two firms, one in Eugene and one in Portland, to help, you know, promote the Cultural Trust, because it is a lot of work. We do a lot of in-person, one-on-one discussions about what it is and how it works and the impacts that we have. It's important to have that, you know, relationship with our donors. We have people that call, you know, every year to talk to our person who accepts donations on the phone, and she gets to know quite a few of our donors.
So do you have a plan for addressing the marketing gap?
There was a Vice Chair Marsh and Chair Nathanson, members of the committee. There was a bill in place to the other issue I should talk about is that the our ability to allocate funding from the revenue of the license plate expires in June of this year, and we are talking to folks about how we might extend that expiration date to enable the trust to use the license plate funding for marketing. Without it, there would not be much of a trust left to operate and to do what we do. Again, the trust was originally conceived back in the day, Representative Smith, as an account that would reach $200 million, and the function of the trust would be to basically administer those funds in grant-making programs, live off the interest and earnings. And that $200 million was going to be reached by the sale of two state properties. The recession hit. The sale did not happen, and we never got close to the 200 million. We're currently at about 27 million, and it would take about 80 years to get to 200 million. At that point, the trust made a fundamental shift. It pivoted from being conceived as an agency that would manage an account to an agency that had to market and promote to get people to participate. And that's when the Cultural Trust license plate came into existence to help fund the marketing and promotion of the trust. You know, we continue to exist in that environment where we have to raise funding in order to support culture statewide.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I just want to add to what was shared. In addition, back in 2001, there was an understanding among the Joint Committee on Ways and Means that this new cultural trust was going to be an entity that the legislature was also going to continue to make periodic investments into to help get to that level. And so you had the real estate transactions that were going to occur, but then there also was a bipartisan commitment to try and increase funding into it over a period of sessions, even though we can't commit future sessions.
Thank you. Thank you for that background, Representative Smith. One other question. There's an Arts and Business Alliance of Eugene. Are there similar organizations elsewhere in Oregon, and what is the relationship between that business and you, if there is any?
Chair Nathanson and members of the committee, Yes, it's a wonderful organization, and there are a couple of examples of organizations like that across the state. The largest one is the Portland Regional Arts and Cultural Coalition in Portland area. It serves the Portland Metro, and our coalitions for the trust oftentimes serve that purpose of connecting businesses to cultural nonprofits. It's an important role. A lot of employee giving programs occur with arts and business councils to encourage businesses to have their employees donate to cultural organizations, and then the business sometimes matches that amount. So there is a lot of, you know, awareness not only at the business level but also with employees.
Thank you. Anything else?
I have a question for Kyle.
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Kyle, you note in the staff summary that there's an issue regarding the statute at a $500 limit and the actual application of it. Is that something that we need to fix?
Yes, Representative Marsh, that's a made a note of that, and that's a note that we have for any time this bill would move, as we would probably request an amendment. Right now, the way the language is structured, yeah, it does limit those joint filers to only that $500 limit. But ever since the original enacting legislation, the way it was scored, everything has always been administered, and the expectation was it'd be 1,000. So that would be a kind of more of a technical change that we would, yeah, recommend including.
But we do intend to move forward with that fix.
Yes. Yeah, I didn't want to request the amendment ahead of the public hearing, but that is on our note to do.
Thank you.
I think we've exhausted our questions for you. The grilling will end now. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, I'd like to hear from Elena Pena and Ginevra Ralph. And Scott, could you come up also?
Sure.
And Scott Freck is coming forward.
Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Findlay, and Vice Chair Marsh, and members of the committee. My name is Elena Pena. I am a volunteer from Polk County, and I reside in Independence, Oregon. And I just want to say that the Cultural Trust has really benefited us very much in our community. It has, from the very beginning that it started in Polk County. And so it is important for me to share that we're very proud of our community, because we have a very close connection with our city folks, our city government, that has supported this very well. They have, I would say that they are a role model to all other committees or any other Oregon existing fiestas, because of they surpass the partnership that we have with each other. And I think that's very important to the cultural things that happen in the community if we work together. So this park that we use, thanks to the city, is very beautiful. I consider it to be one of the most beautiful ones in Oregon, of course. It's right along the river, and also it helps a lot with all the folks that show up, because we have over 10,000 people that show up. And the beautiful thing about it is that the mayor and his wife are always there to open the fiesta for us, and they participate in some of the activities that happen there. We have a family type event that is smoke free and alcohol free, and the people that show up feel that they're in a safe place, and you can see the families enjoy the festivities, the different kinds of foods, the cultures, different kinds of cultures, the different kind of people that show up, and you can see the harmony and the joy that the people enjoy in this area of festivity in our community. So we're very grateful to the Cultural Trust for making this effort in our community very, very well done through the, as you heard. I'm really impressed at so much that this cultural trust, and today I learned so much more from the presentation that I just heard.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Marsh, Vice Chair Finley, and committee members. My name is Ginevra Ralph. I've lived in Eugene area since 1971. I am a co-founder of the now 28-year-old John G. Shedd Institute for the Arts, been a co-founder and supporter of a number of other cultural and arts organizations, both in Eugene and around the state for all those years, and had the privilege of being one of the designers of the Lane County Cultural Coalition when the trust first was developed. I have to say I was very skeptical when this Oregon Cultural Trust was first promoted and suggested, and particularly when it wasn't funded, as Representative Smith mentioned, and even worse when there was a moment where it looked like the income and maybe even the corpus was going to be violated at one point. But I'm happily been proven wrong, and those doubts have gone away. I think the trust is a great equalizer in this state, especially via those county coalitions, which I think is a brilliant element of the way the funding is distributed, because it's a statement that says a healthy, vital cultural and arts scene across the state is good for all Oregonians, and it is that statewide obligation to take care of Lakeview just as we do Portland and everything else in between. I want to give you two examples that have happened for the Shedd Institute that have had, I think, major ripple effects as a result of two grants. Well, we've had several grants, but two in particular. One was a small one a number of years ago from the Cultural Coalition to help fund a third site of a memory care facility sing-along program that we do every week. It's called Unforgettable, and we are now in 9 different sites, and it is a testimony to how we are implementing lifelong participation. What happens with folks with dementia and memory care facilities is rather stunning through this participation, and the cultural coalition was instrumental in being able to expand that. The next big one that we received was last year. It was one of the largest grants that the trust has ever given, and it was to install hearing loops in the Shedd Institute. It's our 70,000-square-foot building. We have 3 performance venues in that site, and we will ultimately have loops in all of those rooms, as well as 17 classrooms and meeting spaces. This is Eugene's known for disability access. This is one element where we are way, way behind. And what's happened as a result of this is that folks have come out of their closets being able to hear again. People have said, I never thought I could would hear strings again. This is changing lives, and we've developed a committee that is a loop lane committee. And already it's generated a business to go install loops in area churches, senior centers, businesses, other performing arts venues. I've had a call from the Civic Stadium, how do we loop basketball courts in the outdoor arenas, that sort of thing, and some national repercussions through Tessitura, which is a major international customer relations database, and a link with their board and CEO through, again, international performing arts groups. It's by law in Australia and the UK. Your taxi cabs are looped. You actually can hear in subway stations. I mean, it's novel, except that it shouldn't be. And the cultural trust has allowed us to have that extra ripple effect as well as in our own building. Anyway, thank you very much for this opportunity. Appreciate it.
Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Finley, Vice Chair Marsh, and members of the committee, thank you for providing this opportunity to speak today. My name is Scott Freck, and I speak today on behalf of 2 organizations. First, I am the Executive Director of the Eugene Symphony Association, a position I've held for almost 7 years, and for 6 years I've been a member of the Board of Directors of the Cultural Advocacy Coalition. So first, wearing my coalition hat, I can say that we strongly support the renewal of the cultural tax credit, just as we support the original visionary plan put forth by the 2001 legislature to create a significant fund for the arts, heritage, and humanities in Oregon. As you know, the tax credit generates nearly $5 million for the trust annually, which is more than 80% of its total income per year. This continued source of revenue is vital to maintain the momentum of building the trust toward its original plan goal, while continuing to provide grant support and access to the arts and culture for our fellow Oregonians. Now, putting my Eugene Symphony hat on, I can speak as the administrative leader of one of the nearly 1,500 cultural nonprofits in Oregon that are eligible for cultural trust funding. Between direct grants and sub-grants awarded through county cultural coalitions, in any given year, more than 600 of these nonprofits will receive funding. And these grants allow us to provide the kind of service for our communities that we should be doing. They provide access to a sense of social inclusion and societal participation to people who might otherwise be marginalized, overlooked, and forgotten. And specifically, I just want to give you an example. I can tell you that the Eugene Symphony's most recent cultural trust grant in 2017 supported a program called Symphony Connect, which brings a chamber ensemble into human service agencies in Lane County. These partners serve populations such as residents of low-income housing, at-risk youth at an alternative high school, people with cognitive impairment or psychiatric disability, and women and children who are at high risk of abuse. These are not people who can buy a ticket and go to the Holt Center to hear a concert, but who still deserve to have the power of music in their lives. The program centers on a message of healing and hope, and the outcomes have been nothing short of astonishing. Each partner site reports an increased sense of community and kindness towards each other, and that participants feel that they are part of something larger than themselves. They say that being around this music helps them better regulate their emotions and better tolerate the often toxic stress of their daily lives. Finally, I'll offer that Oregon ranks 33rd in total arts and cultural funding nationally. That is obviously in the bottom half, with only 16 states with lower levels of funding than we have. Renewing the cultural trust tax credit not only keeps us from slipping into the bottom quarter, but more positively, continues to provide the individual joy and connection that only our cultural experiences can bring us. Thank you very much.
Questions for this panel? Thank you for being with us
today.
Thank you very much.
Paul Cosgrove.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Marsh, Vice Chair Finley, Paul Cosgrove representing the Cultural Advocacy Coalition. I just have a couple of quick comments. One is, there was another version of the tax credit extension bill, House Bill 2052, that was referred to the House Economic Development Committee along with this bill for a programmatic review, as it often happens with tax credits before they come to you for the revenue review. And that was House Bill 2052. It was the governor's bill calling for a 10-year extension of the Cultural Trust. Not surprisingly, most of the supporters of the trust testified in favor of that bill rather than the 6-year extension. But I wanted to highlight for you that the OLIS list of letters in support of this program in House Bill 2052 includes 40-plus letters from organizations large and small with statewide impact or very local impact. They're from the far east, the far south, the far north, and the far west, as well as in the valley. So lots of organizations. And some of those, it hasn't been discussed as much here, are not just arts organizations, as you might consider that, but they're in fact historical preservation organizations, because those too are supported by the trust. So I would commend to you, if you have a few minutes, to look at the OLIS House Bill 2052 list of all the people who have talked about the trust and how important it is to their organizations. And then lastly, I just, as a personal comment, I also remember, as does Representative Smith, the formation of this organization. And I remember it happened right at the time of the recession. Those lands that were going to be surplus lands that were going to be used as to supplement the corpus were sold and went to deal with other budget needs as the economy dropped. And that was a sad time, but the trust has continued. It continues to do good things. And as you've heard, this is the primary source of funding, the contributions that qualify for this tax credit. So it's very important for these organizations. Thank you. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Questions?
Thank you.
Thank you for being
Thank
here.
Thank you.
You know, any time at a public hearing, especially this week when things seem particularly stressful, bill deadlines and so forth, any time at a public hearing where we can hear testimony about harmony and festivity, joy and connection is just a wonderful thing. I don't suppose that's going to be true of our next our next public hearings. Thank you all for being with us. There's no other testimony on this bill today. I'm closing the public hearing on House Bill 2132. I'm opening a public hearing on House Bill 2140.
The final bill you have before you today is another six-year extension bill for a tax credit. This one is related to tax credit for payments to employee and dependent scholarship programs. Again, there's background material on this credit as well. Just brief background, the credit is set up for qualified employers that are providing a qualified scholarship via a qualified scholarship program. And the employer can receive a credit equal to 50% of the amount of the qualified scholarship funds that are paid from the employer to support that scholarship program. There are some limitations on the credit. They cannot exceed $50,000 per, in this case, taxpayer would be the employer per year. There are carry forward provisions, and it is designed for employers that are employing at least 4 full-time equivalent employees, but no more than 250. So it is specified to specific types of employers and the number of employees they have. Another limitation on this is an employer may receive no more than $1 million in total lifetime credits. That hasn't been an issue for this credit. It is pretty seldom used. There is in the background material. Generally, it's two employers or so on average over the past few years have been using this. So it's relatively or pretty modest, only a few thousand dollars each year.
Thank you. Representative Finley.
So I think Kyle just answered my question. My question is, thank you, Madam Chair, is how many people and corporations have used it? How much is the ask? But it seems like it's well overfunded as it is, if it's very few participants.
Yes, Representative Finley, we put it as a minimal in the background material that's on OLIS. It does show, I think, that the high in terms of number of years was 4, maybe 5 employers in any given year. There have been years where it's been 0 as well. So this is, extremely modest, a few thousand dollars per year.
Thank you. I wonder why we do that.
There is still no one signed up to testify on this bill. Is that correct? Are there any other questions? I'm closing the public hearing on House Bill 2140. There's no other business before us. We are adjourned.